Welcome to Joe Howarth's Happiness Hacks podcast. If you'd like to find out more about Joe's work, head over to thehappinessclub.co.uk and consider becoming a member. Sometimes on this journey, it's good to be part of a bigger, friendly group, and you get daily strategies and access to trained coaches and mental health professionals.
I'm Joe Howarth from the Happiness Club, and welcome to another one of my World of Happiness interviews. Today I am ridiculously excited because I have the wonderful Joe Rubino from the Centre for Personal Reinvention, all the way from the US of A, across that enormous pond. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Joe. It's nice to be with you today.
Good to be with you. Good name, by the way.
Likewise.
Yes, very good. So, first question. Very simply, what do you do?
Well, we support people to live their best lives. And that's a very broad statement that a lot of different components go into. My main specialty is self-esteem elevation, where we champion children and adults to feel good about themselves and to feel competent and capable, to feel worthy, to look upon others as the more they contribute to them, the more they get back in return. So it's not an ego thing. It's a contribution thing, and it's a mutuality where the more we're of service to others, creating value in the world, the more value we get back. And so wherever people are in their lives, we support them to create warmer, more loving relationships, greater prosperity, more happiness and fulfillment in their work and in their play, and basically to live lives without regret.
That is so cool. I love that. I love that you work with children on self-esteem too. One of the strands of my business is to go into schools and teach kids mindfulness techniques largely to help them manage difficult emotions. So I love that you don't just focus on the grown-ups.
Go on. Yeah, that's wonderful. That's actually something that we do as well. We support both children and adults to manage their emotional reactiveness, which is a big component of self-esteem. Mm. Because when people are reacting emotionally, when they're at the effect of their moods, be it anger or sadness or fear, then they're not in control of how they're landing in the world, how they're coming across to others, and they're not responding deliberately in a way that supports them, that enhances their personal effectiveness and charisma. So emotional reactivity is a big one that we'll talk a little bit more about as we go on here.
Yeah, and I think that's key, isn't it, to teach, especially for children, because I mean, I come across adults all the time who don't realize that they're responsible for themselves and that they have the ability to be in control of their thoughts and their feelings and their behaviors. So I think that's huge for children to learn, especially, isn't it? That actually there's something I can do in this situation that I might not want to be in. There's something I can do to make myself feel better about it.
Well, it makes kids feel as though they're 10 feet tall and bulletproof when they realize that they're not at the effect of what other people's stuff is.
Yeah.
They don't have to be at the effect of bullying, at the effect of bad behavior, at the effect of people's anger or sadness or fear or judgment. They can actually recognize that the upsets are over there when they happen. 99% of an upset is about the person who's upset, and only 1% about you. So that gives kids and adults great personal freedom in recognizing that we always have the ability to be in control of our emotions and our responses to others in life. And not only does that make us more personally effective, but it's very calming, it's very peaceful, and it allows us to really be in charge of how we land with others, and to not constantly be this ping pong ball that's being tossed around at the effect of other people's whims and bad behavior or decisions.
Yeah, brilliant. Love it. So can you give us a bit more of an idea of why? Why do you do it? Why do you do what you do? Why did you start the center? What Where did it come from?
Well, the research that I've done over the last 26 years has pointed me in the direction that more than 85% of the people on our planet suffer from self-esteem issues in one or more of the six key areas of life. So whether that's their health and appearance, their wealth or finances, their career or their job, their occupation, their relationships being strained or not very fulfilling, the area of personal and spiritual development, and the area of having fun and recreating, pursuing their passions. So if you're not a 10 on a scale from 1 to 10 in all six of those areas, it's most likely because you have a thought about yourself as not being able to have it all in that respect. So some people have situational self-esteem issues where, for example, maybe you're not very good socially, but you're very good at math or at school, or just the opposite could be true. Or some people have more pervasive self-esteem issues where they don't feel good about themselves. They don't feel like they're capable or competent or worthy, or they belong, they're lovable, they feel that they're significantly flawed in one or more ways. So what we do is we show people that they made it up or they bought into someone else's negativity early on in life, as we all have. My own personal experience started at the age of 5 when I was bullied by some schoolyard by some teenagers, and they tossed me around and I hit my head on concrete and went home with a concussion at 5 years old. And I made up that people were mean and cruel and that I was weak and couldn't take care of myself and that the world was a dangerous place. And so I became an extreme introvert. I protected myself from people by avoiding them. And I became a dentist because people couldn't talk back to me. And all of the decisions in my life were based upon this early decision that I made at 5 years old that people were dangerous. And so it wasn't until I entered into personal development at the age of 35 that I realized that I made up a lot of this stuff and I bought into a lot of negativity from others. And importantly, we all have the ability to shift out of these interpretations that don't support us. We can actually create interpretations that empower us. We can decide to live from a declaration of the person that we want to be known for rather than however we think the default landed with us. In other words, we think that we're flawed, we're unlovable, we're not good enough, we're somehow defective in so many areas. And that's the lie. Because when we realize that life is a process, and when we get clarity around managing our commitments, we can now make intelligent choices and decisions that guide us in life that align with those commitments and honor our values and speak to the qualities that we want to be known for. So we can live deliberately as opposed to living at the effect of whatever it is that we made up about ourselves and others in the world, which is how most people are living their lives.
I love that you use the word decide in there, because for me, that's one of the things that I get questioned about. And actually, when I'm talking to the members of my happiness club, I talk to them about happiness, because that's obviously my thing, being a decision. And it's not just a choice, it's a decision. And it's a decision that you can make every day. And again, I think for a lot of people, that's a total revelation, isn't it? That they can decide to be a certain way.
It's a total revelation, and especially when the opposite is true, when people are addicted to sadness. Yeah. You know, people feel as though, if you look at people who are depressed in the world, 350 million people are estimated to be depressed. And what is depression? Depression is a habit that is formed where people scan for and find things to be sad about. So it's so easy to create disempowering interpretations that make us sad. And we become victims. We become at the effect of what other people say and do. And we think that, you know, it's a disease that we have, this depression, this sadness is unavoidable. We were given a bad deck of hand, a bad hand with respect to what life has given to us. We don't realize that we make choices moment by moment. We attract people that are consistent with our energy. And so if we want to be happy, we need to give off happy energy. We need to contribute to other people. We need to have positive expectations. We need to see our success and our happiness as inevitable, so we're self-motivated to do the things that align with that success and happiness, as opposed to being, you know, on the pity pot, having this poor me attitude, and then wondering why the world won't bow to give us what we want, when we've actually manifested the exact reality that surrounds us. So wherever we are in life is exactly consistent with what we've manifested. And if we're unhappy, if we don't like it, if we're unfulfilled, if we're poor or not abundant, it's because we've made decisions about ourselves and others and about the world in general that do not support us. So the good news is that we can flip that light switch. We can start to recognize when we're making up things that don't support us. We can create new empowered interpretations that do. And we can. That's what I mean by living deliberately. And it's a muscle that needs to be developed. And it's so exciting when we develop that muscle, because the sadness or the fear or the anger. Let's talk a little bit about that for a minute, if I could. You know, as I said, a lot of people are addicted to sadness, but even more people are addicted to anger. If you look at the state of the world today, it's full of angry people. Why is that? It's because anger allows people to dominate others and avoid being dominated. It allows people to be right about something, and people will do anything to be right. It allows them to be forceful in the moment and get people to do their will. Mm-hmm. And all of that is why we keep it in place. But most people are totally unaware of what it's costing us in terms of our relationships, our happiness, our peace of mind, our fulfillment, our ability to live a life that is meaningful. The third type of predominant emotional reactive mood, besides anger and sadness, is fear. It's been estimated that 24% of women and 16% of men are addicted to fear. Again, these are victims, just like the sad people. It puts them on edge. They live on the edge, whether that's losing their job, not having enough money to support themselves and their families, whether it's living in a war zone or in an area where there's always some sort of calamities happening, like fires or earthquakes or tsunamis or whatever, or it's just about constantly living in that fearful state where we marry the person that makes us afraid, or we create a job where we're on the edge all the time. Why? We don't like being afraid, but it allows us to justify not being responsible for making our life work in a way where we have a reserve, where things work calmly and we expect great things to happen. Because we can say, it wasn't my fault. I was afraid. I was paralyzed. And so one of the exercises I'd like our viewers to take on today is to identify what mood, what predominant emotional reactive state actually runs your life. Is it a form of anger, sadness, or fear, or something else? And when you identify what that is, you now can start to recognize as a big red flag whenever you're in that mode, whenever someone says or does something that makes you angry or makes you sad or makes you afraid. You'll realize that no one can make you anything. You make yourself that way, but you've been using this as a justification for survival, for getting others before they get you, be it with anger or retreating in sadness or being on the edge and not taking responsibility with fear. And so when you can recognize that in the moment of an upset, in the moment when the heat is on, you can ask yourself, what did I make up about myself and about the other person, or about the world, that has me in my mood, in my anger, in my sadness, or in my fear? And am I willing to give it up in this moment? Because it's so juicy to be in that mood. If you're willing to give it up, then you can release it. You can take some deep breaths and count backward from 5 to 4 to 3 to 2 to 1. You can create a new interpretation that has no emotional reactive state associated with it. So if someone yells at you, you can make something up, an interpretation about them that has nothing to do with you. Maybe they're having a bad day. Maybe they're angry at someone else. Or maybe, you know, they're looking to get something off their chest that if it has any validity, then it's a contribution to you. And if it doesn't, then like a jacket, you can try it on and decide not to wear it if it's not something that supports you. So when we have the ability to let go of the attachments to other people's emotions, we can ourselves become emotionally free. And that is when the happiness can flow.
Definitely. And I love that question. I love just taking a moment to ask yourself, which of those, what am I doing? Am I fear? Am I anger? Am I sadness? That's such a simple, and that's what I love about a lot of this stuff, is that it's not rocket science, is it? It's simple questions like that that just make your brain go, oh yeah, hang on a minute, I'm being fearful about this because that, right, I don't have to be. I love that. That's such a brilliant technique. Thank you for sharing that. And again, I think you've hit on the absolute key there with the word responsibility, because I think, and I definitely find this in the work that I do, is that people confuse responsibility with blame. And they think that if you're talking to them about taking responsibility for their own thoughts and feelings and actions and all of that, that actually you're saying to them, well, it's your fault. It's, you know, you need to blame yourself for this situation. And it's not about that at all, is it? It's a completely different thing.
Yeah, it's about the ability to respond. Responsibility has nothing to do with blame or fault. It's a place to come from, not a place to hold yourself in account as blame or unworthiness. So when you can hold it differently and you can look upon every challenge, every problem as a gift to you, not like it's your fault, but as an opportunity for you to learn something, to grow, to contribute more of who you are, to evolve, to be more effective with other people. All of that is a gift to you. And the more you accept it as a gift, the more you become 10 feet tall and bulletproof, because no one can press your buttons or pull your strings any longer, because you're no longer at the effect of other people's bad behavior. Doesn't mean you condone their bad behavior, but it means that you don't have to be sucked into that vortex. You don't have to be allow other people to permit you to lose it. And that is so freeing when you can realize that you're responsible for your own happiness. You're responsible for your own prosperity. You're responsible for everything that you say and do, and no one can make you do something that is contrary to that. Then you'll realize that it gets back to realizing what you're committed to. It's like going down a fork in the road, and there's a Y in the fork where there's two paths, and you've gone by the path of blame and fault. You've gone down the path where you where you're emotionally reactive, where you don't take responsibility for your words or your deeds. You just make up things to justify them. You have the ability at where the fork meets, where you can take the other path, the path of heart, the path that is with emotional responsibility, where you actually manage your interpretations, where you contribute your gifts to other people, where you give people the benefit of the doubt by having empathy for what it's like in their lives, where you forgive them for making mistakes and you forgive yourself for making mistakes, and where you live gratefully with gratitude that says, everything that comes across my path is a gift to me, and I get to discover what that gift is. So you're in the inquiry around how is this blessing my life? And when you look for blessings, more blessings come your way. So it's a very exciting position to come from when you're always responsible, in the sense that you know that it's all good and it's all there for your development.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I could talk to you for hours. Okay, so what gives you personally the biggest buzz in your work, but also in life? What do you get the biggest buzz from?
From changing lives. Just as my life was changed when I realized that I went from this resigned introvert who was basically dead, very apathetic to life. The few friends that I had constantly told me I couldn't lead three people in silent prayer. I was in a profession that didn't serve me. I wasn't passionate about it. To go from something that I loved doing because I realized the truth, and that everybody has their own truth. And when you tell the truth, it frees you up. So most of us live a lie, and that lie is based in resignation. It's based in interpretations that don't support us. And what serves me and gives me most passion is to see people flip that light switch, to realize that they are in control of their lives. No one needs to be poor. No one needs to have broken relationships. No one needs to be mired in anger or sadness or fear or resignation. No one needs to be at the effect of what other people say and do. And when people realize that we all are so extraordinary in our own ways, we don't need to look for others to give us things. We have the ability to contribute to them. And the more we contribute to them, the more we'll get back. And that's what abundance creation is all about. It's about creating value for other people. So it's such an empowered place to be. And when we can get to kids early on in life, then we don't have to have them reinterpret all the bad things they made up about themselves and others in the world. We can champion them to make up good things from the start and to live this life of possibilities. And it's so exciting when you see a child get this early on and impact others because they realize that they can. And it's the same with adults, but with adults, a lot of it involves unlearning the things that have created the self-sabotage. Yeah. So it's with children, the earlier you can get to them, the more potential they have to just soar, just as everyone does.
Absolutely. And I mean, I talk to people, I have a vision of an entire generation of children growing up with this stuff kind of inbuilt in them, you know, where yes. They're not even aware, it's just second nature to them. Yep. That just, the idea of a world like that just gives me shivers. That would be amazing, amazing, brilliant.
Thank you for listening. Now go, do. Don't be part of the self-help movement. Go ahead and test this stuff in your own experience. And don't forget to head over and subscribe to this podcast as well so you never miss a bit. Leave a review and click on the fifth star.